shackles on the rear and jacked up high. Slant six rubbing and ready to fly. Blast back mufflers making a noise. Look out, boys, this ain't no toy. Ragtop's down, I got a foot of lead. Strong winds are blowing on past my head. Oil's topped off with the racer's edge. All four wheels got brand new treads. 63, 63, 63, 63. I feel free in my 63. I feel free in my 63. Metal flake paint, not a spot of rust. Ford and Chevy can't eat my dust. Watch my wheels and hear me peel. Burning rubber begins to squeal. They're playing our song on the radio. Tell your mama you gotta go. The title's mine and I got the key. Come on, baby, take a ride with me. 63. I feel free in my 63. I feel free in my 63.
Back up again for the wind, for the kill, boy, I don't need you. I'm Ella Harp, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Pose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
All right, let's go through a few different news stories from the last 24 hours. Today is the NRA convention, National Rifle Association, in Houston, Texas. It is also Texas, the state, the site of the deadliest mass shooting in a school since Sandy Hook a decade ago. And Donald Trump is going to be speaking at the NRA convention. Greg Abbott is going to be speaking there. Ted Cruz is going to be speaking there. And all of them blame everything other than guns for the mass shooting that took place earlier this week. That's what Republicans do. There has been increased pressure that, I mean, listen, there's been pressure that the convention not even happen. It's a vile event by an organization whose goal is just to sell guns. Their clients are the gun manufacturers. They are paid by gun manufacturers to increase demand for guns. That's what they do. But short of the event being canceled, there's been pressure on people like Donald Trump not to speak there, but Donald Trump plans to speak there, and he is doubling down, posting to his, I guess it's a social media platform, Truth Social.
Truth Central.
Yeah, he posted, quote, "America needs real solutions and real leadership in this moment, not politicians and partisanship. That's why I will keep my longtime commitment to speak in Texas at the NRA convention and deliver an important address to America. In the meantime, we will continue to pray for the victims, their families, and for our entire nation. We are all in this together." Going on to say, a horrible time for our country. The idea that because we need solutions, it makes sense to speak at the NRA. The NRA is never going to have a solution to school shootings or shootings in general. The NRA wants more people to buy guns. One of the ways that you get people to buy more guns is to make them believe that it's really dangerous out there, or to actually allow it to be really dangerous out there. It's sort of the same thing. If people think they need a gun, they're going to go and buy a gun. And then if there's fewer shootings, you go and you say, hey, that's thanks to guns. Go out and buy more guns. Either way, the NRA's solution is to buy more guns. And the idea that they are going to be an arbiter or a meeting point of any kind of actual solutions is absurd. It is insane that, what, 96 hours after this shooting, in the same state, the NRA is gathering to talk about how great guns are and how access to them shouldn't be restricted. So Trump will be speaking there. It's disgusting. It's depraved. It's absurd. But it's exactly what we would expect him to do. Okay, a sitting Florida representative, Randy Fine, who represents the 53rd district in Florida, threatened Joe Biden with gun violence in the aftermath of the Uvalde, Texas shooting. You have a shooting, okay? And then Joe Biden wants to do something about gun violence, and an elected official threatens Biden with guns. He tweeted, quote, "I have news for the embarrassment that claims to be our president. Try to take our guns and you'll learn why the Second Amendment was written in the first place." That's an elected official, ladies and gentlemen. He should be immediately removed from office. The Secret Service should visit him and have a nice chat. And he was confronted about what he tweeted, and he kind of doubles down weirdly. Now, as a warning to people watching, Randy Fine is extremely red in this video, just as a heads up. Listen to this guy. What a doofus.
I think when the President of the United States gets on the day of a mass shooting and says he's going to come and take people's guns away, that's incendiary.
He
turned his speech into a speech on gun control. It was hugely inappropriate. It was hugely inappropriate to do that day. If they are going to start this, they cannot expect us to sit silently while they try to strip our Second Amendment.
You know, it doesn't really help your cause when Joe Biden says, hey, I don't know, we still haven't really tried any gun safety regulations, maybe we should, for you to threaten to shoot the president implicitly. It doesn't really help your cause that we should be just doing nothing about the gun element. Incredible. All right, he's got to go. And of course, as usual, they insist, oh, it's he's injecting politics. He's injecting politics. These are decisions made by political figures. How on earth do you address something that politicians should deal with without injecting politics? And of course, it's used as a pejorative. Well, you're injecting politics. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a political issue. Why is that bad? That should just be the that should just be the reaction. Yeah, this is a political issue. The people are coming to us as politicians saying, please do something. So who should they go to? Are they going to go to, I don't know, doctors to pass some law about guns? It's an absurd situation. And even more absurd is that this guy is trying to say it would be really bad to take anyone's guns, even though that's not what Joe Biden said. It would be really bad to take people's guns. And to prove to you how bad of an idea it would be, I'm going to threaten to use my gun on the president. You're making the case that your guns should be taken, sir. What a vile and disgusting guy. All right. This next story is kind of a mix of the gun story and also a 2022 story. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, and I want to be respectful and kind of delicate with this story, but also it there's some insanity going on. There's a guy named Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker is running for Senate in Georgia. Herschel Walker is endorsed by Donald Trump. Herschel Walker is a former NFL football player. And there are now multiple clips of him being, I don't mean just slightly kind of loopy. I'm talking about complete incoherence when asked about what should be done with regard to guns. Now, I don't, what's tough about this is I don't want to say this is necessarily a story about mental illness, but there are many reports about Herschel Walker that he suffers from dissociative identity disorder, that he has multiple personalities. So is there possibly a mental illness component here? Yeah. There is also the story or the allegation that what we're talking about here is a brain injury from football, that he has CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. But it also feels wrong to say this is simply a brain injury, because this guy's a right winger either way. And in terms of his ideas, he has had terrible ideas for a long time. So I think if we just say this is a brain injury, we're also doing a disservice. But take a look at these clips. Manu Raju from CNN approached Herschel Walker the other day and asked him, do you think we need new gun laws because of what happened in Texas? And he said, what I like to do is see it and everything and stuff. That's his answer. OK, this is the guy Trump endorsed and who won his primary in Georgia.
Hey, Warner Roger with CNN. I know. Do you support any new gun laws in the wake of this Texas shooting?
Do what now?
Do you support new gun laws in the wake of this Texas shooting?
What I like to do is see it and everything and stuff. I like to see it. You know,
favorite New Jersey.
So he just kind of mumbles to himself, I like to see it. And walks away. This is complete and utter incoherence. This guy could be a senator, okay? And he would be a senator on the backs of Republican votes. Here's an interview he gave yesterday morning to Fox News. And he said that a possible solution to school shootings would be a department that can look at young men, that's looking at women, that's looking at social media. I mean, take a listen.
See, that is a person wielding that weapon. You know, Cain killed Abel, and that's a problem that we have. And I said, what we need to do is look into how we can stop those things. You know, they talked about doing a disinformation. What about getting a department that can look at young men, that's looking at women, that looking at just social media?
What about getting a department that's looking at young men, that's looking at women, that's looking at social media? This could be one of 100 senators. And I want to be sensitive to the mental illness component, the brain injury component, but this is just fundamentally humiliating. This is the winner of the primary.
What about doing that, looking into things like that, and we can stop that that way? But yet they want to just...
We can stop what that way? What would we stop with a department that looks at men looking at women looking at social media? What on earth is that? It's like a strange... it's like those Russian Matryoshka dolls of you've got social media and then women look at that and men look at the women looking. What are you talking about, dude?
Continue to talk about taking away your constitutional rights. And I think there's more things we need to look into. This has been happening for years. And the way we stop it, by putting money into the mental health field, by putting money into other departments rather than departments that want to take away your rights.
Dear God. So that's a Trump endorsed Republican. You know, when Trump ran as a Republican candidate, we said the Republican Party would never be so dumb as to make this guy their nominee. And they did. And then we said, OK, but they're not going to be able to make this guy president. And they did. And so we now see Herschel Walker. We need a department that can look at young men looking at women looking at social media. We see Herschel Walker saying what he wants to do is see it in everything and stuff, see it in everything, as he mumbles to himself as he walks away. And we say, well, they'll never make him the Republican nominee. And they did. And now we're sort of hoping they're not going to make him one of 100 senators, are they? And we're not going to know the answer to that until November. These are really, really scary times. Let me know what you make of it. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show is an audience-supported program. I would love for you to sign up and get instant access to the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Sign up at joinpakman.com. We do an extra show every single day for our members. You can also use the coupon code WOW22 to get a discount off of your membership. Let's hear from people in the audience. We take calls via Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. You can not only engage in moderated, polite discussion about whatever is important to you on the Discord. It's also how we take calls. Let's start today with Brad from New York. Brad, welcome. What's on your mind today?
Hey, David. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I think what I wanted to discuss was I've been seeing a worrying trend in that I am pretty far left and I like to debate conservatives. And something I'm noticing nowadays is people are willing to be openly racist or openly bigoted to get their points across.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give a very quick example. I was debating somebody. I said illegal immigration is not an issue. Very vague, very open. And he said, the only way to save America is to prevent the white race from being bred out.
Right.
And I've never encountered somebody just being blatantly racist like that. I have no idea how to respond to that or if they're even worth engaging with. What would you suggest?
My instinct is that they're not worth engaging with. But if you wanted, what I would find really interesting is to figure out where they got those ideas. And I would start by saying, oh, that's really interesting. So what makes you say that? What are the differences you believe exist between white and non-white people? Like really drill down to exactly what the origins of their beliefs are. When did it first occur to you that white people are superior to non-white people in the ways that you're describing? I would find it very interesting to really get at where those beliefs came from. But in terms of changing those people's minds, I mean, I think it would be great if we could do it. But I don't know that I would necessarily put too much time into it if I were you.
Yeah, my emphasis isn't changing that person's mind. It's more of the people that are listening to the debate.
Fair.
Just by kind of picking their ideas apart. And it becomes more difficult because you can't really logically dissect something that's rooted in logic rooted in illogic very easily.
Right. And I think what you're getting at is you can't help people reason their way out of positions they didn't reason their way into to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I would really I think the most useful thing in that type of situation is to, I don't mean generally, I mean really specifically get to why they believe those things. Because sometimes they might say, well, You know, my dad is the one who originally instructed me on this. And then I would say, really, was your dad ever wrong about anything? You know, I think it would open up an interesting conversation to learn from. But like you're saying, not necessarily to change that person's mind.
Okay, yeah, because I'll typically ask for evidence.
Yep.
You know, because I believe in data. And they'll cite the, 1352 or whatever other white supremacist talking points they have on offhand.
Yeah, often they don't even understand their own talking points. So I also think it's worth getting them to explain their views for that reason.
Okay, thank you. That was really helpful. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. Yeah, those conversations are both incredibly frustrating, but also can be really illuminating if you sort of are prepared and know what to ask. Let's go next to Quentin from Portland. Is that Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon? Quentin from Portland. Yes, I can.
Oh, Portland, Oregon.
Beautiful.
So I had a conversation with my mother, who was extremely, extremely right wing.
Okay.
And she was blaming the lefties or the Dems or the libs, you know, whatever she wants to say.
Yep.
About leaking the Supreme Court document about Roe v. Wade. And I didn't really have a rebuttal saying that, like, I've heard you say that it's more likely a right-leaning person leaked it, but I couldn't really clearly tell her why I have that opinion. So if you could just clear that up, I would really appreciate it. And then also,
well, yeah, okay, let's take it piece by piece. Then I'll get to your second question. So to be clear, what I've said before is, in terms of just plausibility, it's equally plausible that a left winger or a right winger leaked the Supreme Court decision. You could say, well, it's a left winger who wanted to try to create outrage to have pressure on the judges to change their votes and end up maintaining Roe v. Wade. Or you could say it's a right winger who decided to leak it out of fear that some of the justices planning to overturn Roe v. Wade might change their minds to put pressure on them to maintain the positions they had in the February draft. So plausibility is kind of equal, but we have some reporting from longtime Supreme Court reporters, including from NPR, who say that the overarching belief within the court right now is that the leaker was a right winger. But ultimately, we don't know. So what I would ask is, what evidence do you have to support that the leaker was left wing? I would go with that. And of course, there is no such evidence.
Yeah, on a number of issues, that's kind of my response. And
okay.
Yeah. And then also, please just Google Josh Dallas on your show. You look like you are him. That's
who you
are.
Oh, I've been told that before. He's an actor, right?
Yes, he's an actor. You're slightly better looking, but yeah, I mean, you guys, it's uncanny.
I'm only slightly better looking. Oh, boy. All right. Well, I'll take it as a compliment anyway.
All right. Well, thank you, David. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Very, very important stuff there. Let's see what else we have going on. Let's go to William from Las Vegas. William, welcome. I was just in Las Vegas not long ago.
Hello, David. Were you here again for another convention?
No. I just mean like a month ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Contrary to your other caller, you're far better looking than that guy. So just put that out there.
Oh, good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I have two questions for you. First, how agile are the Democrats going to be in the midterm elections, given that we repeatedly have these issues where maniacs shoot people up? We never really solve the issue because no one's able to find a common ground. Adding lethal elements into a school seems like a bananas idea. That's where they want to go. I mean, a few years back when a maniac shut up my town, there's been no progress. So how do you fight the apathy and the, you know, futility of trying to progressively get to a solution?
It's absolutely infuriating. And earlier this week, after the Texas mass shooting, I went through this cycle where it's like a rinse repeat. Mass shooting, there's media coverage, everybody says we've got to do something. A few days go by, then the predominant voice becomes Republicans saying, whoa, 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 we can't take away any gun rights. Then a few weeks or a couple months go by and everybody kind of stops talking about it. And then there's another shooting and it's just rinse repeat. Here's my hope. I'm starting to see some polling, not every poll, but some polling that is showing that as a result of the forthcoming Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade, and maybe because of the obvious non-solutions that Republicans are proposing to the mass shooting issue, I'm starting to see some polling that's starting to point in the direction of November all of a sudden not looking so bad for Democrats. Normally, it should be a disaster for Democrats. Joe Biden just won in 2020. You would expect Democrats to get crushed in the midterm. Some new polling I'm seeing genuinely seems to suggest that voters are sick of what's going on. And maybe it actually won't be bad in November and Democrats might be able to get something done. It's very, very cautious optimism, but it does seem like something might be happening here.
I hope so. It is so frustrating, especially having seen a maniac shoot up my town and there'd be nothing done about it.
Yeah,
it just happens every day.
Yep.
So my last question, if you don't mind, sir,
sure.
I'm making my first trip to New York City later.
Yep.
And I wondered in Brooklyn area, where's a good place, a great place, if you're a tourist, to get a great bagel that represents that city?
Okay. So listen, if you are in Brooklyn, my recommendation is go visit our friends. You know, I actually don't know because it's been a couple months since I've been there. On Smith Street, not too far south of Smith and Atlantic, okay?
Okay.
There's a bagel cafe on the west side of Smith Street. It's right on the corner. At one point, it was called Mocha Bagels. I think now it's called Smith Street Bagels, maybe. Go in there.
Okay.
Tell them David Pakman sent you. They know me in there, and that is a place I would highly recommend. They'll make you whatever you want. If you say, oh, I want, roast beef on a French toast bagel with maple syrup, I wouldn't recommend that, by the way, but
right.
They'll make you whatever you want. They're the nicest guys in there.
I think that's close to where I'm at. I'm in that Borum Hill, Dumbo area where I'm staying, so I think that's
You're
close.
You're blocks away from this, absolutely.
Beautiful. David, thank you so much for accepting my call. Have a great one.
My pleasure. Thank you. Wow. What a big day of phone calls here. It's wild. Let's go next to Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. Brian, welcome.
Hey, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Awesome. I was just seeing today one of my home state representatives, Ruben Gallego, was sending off some fiery tweets.
Yep.
In the direction of Ted Cruz and some other GOP reps. Do you think that kind of engagement online is effective or would actually lead to change, or do you think it's more performative? I'm just wondering what your opinion is about it.
I think that our lawmakers don't make policy based on arguments they get into on Twitter, but I do think that the performance can have some value because I want to see elected officials who genuinely seem to care. And I've interviewed Ruben and he genuinely seems to care. So to the extent that it's authentic, I don't care so much about, oh, is he really going to convince other members of the House or Senate one way or the other on Twitter? No, I don't think he is. But he genuinely is passionate and I don't mind seeing that on social media.
Awesome. And then do you expect any federal gun control legislation to happen after this?
I don't. I really, if I'm honest, I don't.
All right. Thank you. That's it.
Yeah. All right. No problem. Yeah. I mean, it's sad, but I just don't. Let's go down to Texas and speak to Asher from Dallas. Asher, go. Asher from Dallas, you're on the air. And last chance for Asher from Dallas. You are muted. I need you to unmute or select your correct audio device. I can see that you're trying to talk, but no audio is coming through. That could be an audio device issue. All right. Unfortunately, no Asher from Dallas experiencing a technical issue. That's sad to see. Let's go next to Doug from Alabama. Doug, welcome. Doug from Alabama, I can see that you have muted yourself.
Okay, my bad. All right,
there you go.
My bad.
Okay.
Hey, longtime listener, David. I just wanted to just do like a brief rundown and just get your opinion on something really fast. Obviously we're in Alabama. We got really lucky with Doug Jones a few years ago because of the whole fiasco That's probably the most left person that we've had ever serve, because I mean, we had Democrats before, but they were really like Dixiecrats, you know, they weren't really Democrats. So, you know, it's really sad with the state of the elections down here. The current like Democratic, you know, nominees for governor, I'm definitely going to vote for whoever wins. I really think that like Walt Maddox should have ran again, because he was kind of more of like a Biden kind of centrist Democrat, but he probably had the best shot down here. He only lost by like 10 percentage points last time, but luckily it looks like Kay Ivey won, so she's still really, really bad, but the alternative was even worse. But I want to get your opinion on something. I pretty much know what your answer was going to be, because okay. I've heard your opinion before, but you're probably going to be mad at me, but I actually voted in the primary, but I wasn't, you know, I'm definitely going to vote Democrat in the in November, but I just chose, for some reason, my friend told me I was an idiot for doing it, but I just decided to vote in the Republican primary just to get the least evil people to win, because I know that they're basically going to win in November. So I did, even though Mo Brooks was like the worst, probably the worst guy that we could vote for, Katie Britt's even worse in a lot of ways. And, you know, obviously Trump doesn't like Mo Brooks. So I kind of just did like a protest vote, even though I hate Mo Brooks and I don't want him to win. But I don't know. I just wanted your opinion on that. I know you got a show to run, but I appreciate your
Doug. I love it. I don't know what the question is, but we love phone calls from Alabama, and please call in again. Okay, I don't know what the question is. That was very interesting, but I'm just not sure what the question is. We're gonna take a very quick break. Just hold on, because we're going right back to the phone lines in a moment. Let's hear from a few more people in the audience. After all, the show is for people in the audience. It's not for me to sit in a room by myself with a microphone, as fun as that could be. We take calls via Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Okay, very, very important, /Discord. Why don't we speak next to Harry from Columbus, Ohio? Welcome, Harry.
David, obligatory, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you for taking my call. Sorry, I need to jog my memory real quick.
Also, your audio is atrocious. It's like blinking in and out. It's like a popcorn connection.
Is it really, really bad? Give me 1 second to try to address it.
All right.
Isn't that any better for you, David?
You know, it's not, but I think I'll be able to hear your question if you remember it.
Yeah, I do. So I have a question about Dinesh D'Souza. First thing I heard about him was that he was somebody who denied the Southern strategy. That was what I had known him for. Can you tell me a little bit more about him, like in regards to, like, you know, 2,000 mules? Even Trump mentioned it recently. What do you know about Dinesh?
Well, I know he's a convicted felon and a grifter. No, the film, we've talked about the film 2,000 Mules. 2,000 Mules is a film by Dinesh D'Souza, which makes the argument that on the basis of mobile phone geolocation data, that's quite frankly not very accurate. It makes the argument that there were 2,000 so-called mules or ballot traffickers who were making massive dumps of fraudulent ballots into ballot drop boxes, or as Trump likes to call them, drock boxes.
No more drock boxes.
Yeah. It's all completely unsubstantiated. So I wouldn't spend too much time, honestly, thinking about Dinesh D'Souza.
Okay. I have then, real quickly, more substantially, do you think it will be, you know, successful for somebody like to get into Ohio politics for Tim Ryan? He seems to be trying to tack to the middle really hard. He has an ad that says, you know, Democrats really messed it up shipping jobs to China, but, you know, I'm pro-union. I'm, you know, pro-socially left. Do you think that can work to win over, you know, suburban Ohio?
I think it might. Yeah, you know, I think it might. I don't know enough about the Ohio electorate, but I think it's completely plausible. And I support Ryan, and I hope he does crush in November.
Yeah, I just don't know how powerful the anti-China message is for Democrats.
That's a fair question.
I don't buy it.
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what the results
are. It's a Trump talking point.
All right, I'm going to let you go. The connection is just ungodly, so we're going to let you go. But I appreciate all of the questions there. A lot of important stuff. Let's go next to let's go to Schizo from North Carolina. Schizo, you're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. I had a question. So in one of your episodes on May 3rd, you were talking about ESPR withholding information to make money on a book. And you mentioned something. You had talked about you not agreeing with conservatism. Could you explain exactly what you mean by that? And I'm not a conservative. I'm just kind of wondering what your opinion is on it.
You're saying what? Like, why am I not a conservative? You're saying that's the question.
No. So you said you disagree with conservatism.
I'm not a conservative. Yeah, I don't agree with conservative ideas. I'm a progressive. But are you saying like? I'm not sure I know what you're saying.
In particular, because what you were talking about, you said something that the whole aspect. So the point you made was that ESPR was basically like, you could say that what he did withholding that information being treasonous. And I agree with that. That's an interesting point. And then you had said that this isn't conservatism. You disagree with conservatism. And my question is like, what is it about conservatism that you disagree with apart from, you know, being a progressive?
Oh, I guess you're asking me my political philosophy. I mean, I disagree with the economic ideas of conservatism, and I disagree with the social ideas of conservatism. I think the economic ideas have been debunked empirically, and I think the social ideas are retrograde, antiquated, and completely the opposite of modernity. I mean, I don't know if I can lay out on every issue my political philosophy, but like my entire show is based on the idea that I'm a progressive and I think that those conservative ideas are bad and are bad for the country and bad for the people.
Okay, understood. Yeah, because I'm finding myself to be more progressive. I've never felt or been aligned with conservatism. I was just curious because my awakening from like political awakening was 2020. And I voted for Biden because at the time I didn't really understand politics and stuff like that. But I voted for Biden because Trump just seemed like not the best choice. And I'm finding myself that was the best choice for 2020. But I'm finding
Which was the best choice for 2020?
Biden.
Biden. Okay. Biden. Okay. And how old were you in 2020?
I was 28.
Wow. So you didn't, you could have voted in 2016 and you could have voted in 2012, but you didn't.
Right. And there's a bit of a backstory that obviously I'm not going to go into for the time. But yeah, at the time I voted for Biden. And one of the other things I wanted to ask, or I guess kind of like tell you was the interviews that you've been having with Republican candidates, I've been enjoying a lot and not from like a laughing at them for still not accepting like that gut check question where who is currently the president of the US and they will just dance around. And I love it because it's kind of like you're not trying to directly attack that person, but the people who are watching can kind of see, hey, this is the idea that these people are having. And it sort of gets the people to kind of like think about why do they think that way? And the reason why I've been enjoying that is because I am currently surrounded by a lot of conservative Republican people who I don't think understand conservatism. And what they're doing is they're just kind of repeating the talking points and believing the conspiracies, and they don't really have a good basis for their political views.
Well, that's so very common. Right.
And I guess that's sort of my point is like why you disagree with it, because I kind of wanted your take on it, because I'm still like in that journey where I'm trying to understand, you know, politics in that way.
Got it. Well, listen, I lay out all my political views on my show. Any clip you find, that's me laying out my political views. So Schizo from North Carolina, I very much appreciate the call. I am going to move on because I've got a bunch of other people here waiting. Let's go next to Daniel from Texas. Daniel, welcome. What's on your mind today?
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Just barely, Daniel. What's going on?
Sorry, I'll try to get closer to the mic. Now, I was just Sorry, I'm trying to jumble this morning. No, I'm from Texas, as it says, but I've been looking at a lot of the races throughout the country, and one of the ones I'm honestly most interested in seeing the outcome of is Louisiana's Senate race with Gary Chambers. I was wondering what your thoughts might be about him, whether you think he has the has a chance to win, and his platform and all that.
You know, I don't really know that much about that race. That's not one of the ones I've been following super closely. But it seemed to be accurate. This is the race in which the incumbent is the Republican Senator John Kennedy, who's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And then you've got Gary Chambers. And then there's a couple of other candidates as well. Right. It's like a nonpartisan election that's done there. It's a bit of a different system.
Yeah, kind of. From what I've been able to figure out, it's like basically, I guess all three are going to be running at the same time.
Yeah.
With Chambers being like just under the incumbent, the other two kind of like way off.
Yeah, it looks like they have their primary on November 8th. And then it looks like the top two will go to sort of like the final election on December 10th. Yeah, listen, I don't know much about Gary Chambers. I know that John Kennedy is a disaster. So, It would be improper for me to say I support Chambers only because he's not Kennedy, because I don't really know anything about him. But Kennedy is not a good guy, and I support removing him. But I'd have to look more into the race to be able to say any more about it.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Now we're losing you, Daniel. The connection's going haywire, so I'm going to let you go. Let's go next to why don't we go to Bobby from Jersey? Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hello, David. Could you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. My question is that what do you think drives people to arrive at their political conclusions? Do you think it's more of a biological or environmental reasons that make them draw to that specific conclusion?
So there's a couple different things going on here. This is a great question. One, in general, people's political views do mirror those of their parents and the community they were raised in and the people they were raised around. So there's no question that there's lots of people who, if you put them in a liberal family in Connecticut, they're likely to end up liberal. If you put them in a conservative family in Arkansas, they're more likely to end up conservative. So one part of it is the environment you grow up around. At the same time, there are some pretty good peer-reviewed studies into the differences in brains between left and right wingers. And it's believed that right wingers have stronger sort of like disgust reactions and fear reactions, and that also appears to be a factor. So it's kind of a boring answer, but it appears to be sort of like a combination of all of these different things.
That was actually kind of the answer I was looking for, because I've run into stuff like that, and I noticed many of the different personality traits between me and many of my conservative colleagues.
Oh, what do you mean? What's an example? What's a trait you notice in your conservative colleagues?
Like, a lot of them tend to be very aggressive. They tend to always want more. They're very status obsessed. How do you say?
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's something I've noticed. Thank you, David.
All right. There's Bobby from Jersey with a nice question. That's a good topic. Yeah, there's a lot of science around that, and not everybody sort of like accepts or likes it or agrees with the science, but it's pretty interesting stuff. Let's go next to Jonathan from Arkansas. Jonathan, welcome.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I had a question about the Arkansas governor race. As it looks here, living in Arkansas, that Sarah Huckabee Sanders will probably win the governor race.
It does look that way.
And, I do not want her to win at all.
Right.
I was just wondering if you have any advice, because if you think I should vote for the for the Republican Washburn, or if I should just, because voting for a Democrat will be a vote thrown away here in Arkansas, because I do not think Chris Jones will be able to beat the Republicans.
Well, but hold on a second. Sarah Huckabee Sanders earlier this week won her primary, so she's going to be on the ballot. And then Jones, the Democrat, will be on the ballot. But you're saying there will be another Republican on the ballot in November as well?
Yes.
Oh, why? That doesn't make sense to me. Is it a write-in campaign or something?
Oh, no, never mind. I was talking about the libertarian.
Libertarian. Listen, vote for whoever you agree with on the most, okay? That's my advice to you. You can decide in terms of the strategic aspect of who to vote for, but I would just tell you, vote for whoever you agree with the most, because quite frankly, it just seems like Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to blow out the wind, you know?
Yeah. Sadly.
Sadly.
Yeah, I mean, and do you think there's anything I could do, or do you think that's the reality?
No, listen, I mean, I don't think it's worth giving up. She should be challenged as much as possible. If she's going to win, make her spend as much money as possible to win. Make it as difficult as possible for her to win. So I would figure out, do you prefer the Democratic or the Libertarian candidate? You can phone bank, you can get involved, you can door knock. Make it as hard for her as possible. And we have to recognize it's an uphill battle because Arkansas is such a red state.
Yes. Yes. All right, David, I'll let you go. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan from Arkansas. Yeah, it's a tough situation there. All right. Thank you to everybody who called in. We are not going to be able to speak to anyone else today, but we will speak to more people again. We'll go to a quick break and be back right after this. All right, it's time for the Friday mailbag. If you have anything you would like to say to us, to me, you can email info@davidpakman.com. If it's praise, if it's a criticism, if it's a demand for a correction, if it's a question, a topic suggestion, a guest suggestion, any of it. And unfortunately, even if you just have insults, we can't really prevent you from sending the email either. And we are starting today with the type of insult that I have to tell you, I love this kind. I get pleasure from this because it's someone who clearly is so in a fantasy world about the size of our show that I just love this. Jeff wrote in and says, it's hilarious watching you post tinfoil hat conspiracy theories and delusional rants on your tiny YouTube channel. You're just a YouTuber. Stop pretending you're in the same league as actual journalists or opinion people. You're never going to be like Tucker Carlson. God, I hope not. Nobody likes you or respects you. Even clowns like propaganda puppet Kyle Kulinski are several rungs above you. And that's not saying much because he's a laughingstock of YouTube political commentators just like you. So Kyle sucks too, but you're even worse. So what do I love about this? We have a program that's been around 15 years. We have a larger daily audience than many corporate media shows that only get a few hundred thousand viewers a day. We are in the top 0.1% of all YouTube channels. We are the second largest left-wing YouTube channel behind only the Young Turks. This is a full-time job for me and multiple employees. We've already done the thing that he says we will never actually do. And as far as I'm never going to be Tucker Carlson, that's true in two ways. Number one, I'm never going to be as immoral as Tucker Carlson. And number two, I'm never going to have the support of a multi-billion dollar corporation behind me because I'm happy doing it this way. I don't want to do it that way. So, Jeff, you know what? You're right. And I'm so happy that some of the things you're saying are true, although many of them are not. Next email is from Dave. Dave says, question. Hannity supports a candidate on his show, meaning Hannity supported Mehmet Oz in the Pennsylvania Republican Senate primary. It used to be that if a station gave advertising or airtime to one candidate over another candidate, it had value. That value counted as a campaign contribution. I wonder if the FEC would look at this as a contribution to certain candidates and it then be deemed an illegal contribution if that value went over the dollar amount set by law, or would they see it as within the rules of what constitutes a donation or a political contribution? Dave is right that when Hannity has a platform the size of his platform, and he says, I support Oz, for example, and remember, he supported Trump too, so it would apply there as well. Every time that he supports Oz or attacks other people, like Hannity would attack Kathy Barnett, another candidate running in that primary, that has a monetary value. Exactly what it is would have to be figured out. But there's no doubt that that has a monetary value. In terms of the FEC and it being considered a contribution, I don't know. But there's also the aspect of equal time laws. And I don't know to what degree those are being enforced. And honestly, I don't know at this point even where they necessarily apply. But there was a time, and we were, when we started on the radio, we were conscious of this, particularly in local elections when we were up in Massachusetts. That's where the show started. And we would interview local candidates. We would kind of be told, you've got to at least offer everybody in this race the opportunity to be interviewed. They won't all take you up on it, but you've got to give them that opportunity. So needless to say, aside from the legality of it, the kind of like unquestioning, just kind of like, yeah, I guess it's fine. Hannity tells us who he likes and it's just, you know, he's supporting one candidate over another and everybody just goes along their merry business as if there's no monetary value or influence from that. It is weird. I don't know whether the FEC angle you're going to get too far with necessarily. Next email is from Quinn. Quinn wrote in about Liz Cheney. Quinn says, David, I wanted to talk more about the Liz Cheney segment you did the other day. As a Democrat, I feel like it's unfair to say she isn't an ally. I understand she's one of the people who enabled Trump until January 6th, but since then, she's put her career in jeopardy by being one of the only Republicans with a moral red line. It would have been great after January 6th for Republicans to have an epiphany and become civil rights advocating, police reforming, marijuana legalizing socialists. But just because she didn't do a 180 in her values doesn't, or at least shouldn't, mean she's not an ally in this particular fight for accountability. That said, if she really isn't an ally, are there any elected Republicans you think would be? Thanks for hearing me out. This is fine. I mean, listen, Quinn, when I say Liz Cheney isn't an ally, I mean she's not going to fight with us for any policy issue on our side. It's not policy to say, hey, the results of the election are what they are. That's not policy. So I understand, you know, using this very specific line, she's an ally in this particular fight for accountability. This isn't even really a fight. It's just we have an election and Biden won. There was a riot incited and there should be consequences. But the point I'm making is she's not a political ally on issues of policy and substance. And I stand behind that while acknowledging she is on the side of reason when it comes to just like the law is what it is. It should be enforced. Elections have consequences and they're real. I hope that sort of clarifies, Quinn. Ryan wrote in about debating, quote, gun nuts. David, sir, was wondering what your thoughts were on how to approach a conversation with a gun nut. When they have the argument, well, if someone had a gun, they could have stopped them for all of these mass shootings. We know that argument is garbage, but just wondering if you had any tactics on how to handle that. OK, so there's a couple different things that are important to bring up in those situations. First of all, in many of these mass shooting scenarios, you only have to think it through to realize additional guns would accomplish nothing. For example, the Aurora movie theater shooting in Colorado years ago, a shooting in a dark movie theater. It doesn't take much of an imagination to understand how adding more guns in a dark room so that there's more shooting, maybe at the real shooter or maybe not, and then potentially causing, imagine that you're the third guy with a gun and you come in and you just see two people shooting at each other. How do you know which is the bad guy with the gun and which is the good guy with? It's absolute and total chaos. That's number one. Number two, there are numerous examples. Of mass shootings where we later found out there were other people with firearms there and they didn't act because of exactly what I'm saying. It was so chaotic. These things happened so quickly that it didn't actually make a difference. Now, the counterpoint is you occasionally hear about a gun actually used defensively to stop a situation, and that's absolutely and totally fine. But the bigger, more common, more prevalent scenario is that more guns actually add more chaos. And overall, limiting the number of guns that are floating around would have a much stronger impact on reducing gun crime and gun mortality than simply adding more guns to situation. It's just the way history bears it out. Ramon wrote in about a famine and says, David, in having conversations with my family, there seems to be a consensus that an overall food shortage is coming soon. I'm a new parent, and as many others, my baby is affected by the formula shortage already as it stands. I know you've spoken about this in the past. Can you revisit? Many thanks. Love what you do. The latest I've read is that over the next 4 to 6 months, there may be a shortage of specific products, but there is not going to be a shortage of any general food group or nutritional source. And so what I mean by that is, you know, is it possible, and I've talked about this before, is it possible that one type of chicken might not be available in your local store? Yeah, that's possible. But is there going to be no chicken or no suitable alternative like turkey or beef or whatever the case may be? There, I've not read that that's really a concern. Recently, you all know, I love my sumo oranges. This is arguably one of the top fruits in the history of the world. I would die on that hill, okay? The sumo oranges, they're just gone. They come to me, they say, sir, we can't get them. And so I'm instead getting a super sweet navel orange. Now, it might just be, honestly, it might just be seasonality. Maybe this is not a time of year when the sumos are available. But the point is, citrus is available. The exact type of orange I want is not currently available, and it just might be a seasonal thing. So my expectation, Ramon, and I don't have independent knowledge on this. I'm going from the reporting I've read, is there may be a shortage of particular products, but that no food group or a nutritional source, like, for example, dairy, meat, vegetables, fruits, crackers, etc., not expecting to see a shortage there. If the reality on the ground changes, of course, we will tell you. Evan wrote in about being tough on crime. David, why don't Democrats run on a tough on crime platform by promising gun control? It's baffling that the party who says they're tough on crime, Republicans, is also the one unwilling to do anything to crack down on guns. Yeah, I understand the logic of it, right? Which is, hey, Republicans say they're tough on crime, but they want more guns in more places and absolutely no regulations. We are actually tough on crime, we the left, because we will make it more difficult to obtain guns and then commit crimes with them. It makes absolutely perfect sense. The right will diffuse those talking points easily by saying, actually, guns make us safer. If we don't have guns to defend ourselves with, only the criminals will have guns. They have experience with these talking points, Evan. So what you're saying makes sense, but they will be ready for it. Mazin wrote in about the Buffalo shooting and my view on the death penalty. Mazin says, hey, David, I saw a show not too long ago where you said you don't believe in the death penalty. I like to say I don't support it. You don't believe in the death penalty because the justice system makes mistakes, and those mistakes cannot be corrected once someone is put to death. I was wondering if your opinion would change based on the facts of the current shooting at the Buffalo store. We have video evidence that this kid murdered innocent people, as well as a 100-plus page manifesto with his motives. Do you think it's still a better option to let the kid live the rest of his life in prison? I do. First of all, if we are, let's just start first with what's the worst punishment. Based on my beliefs about what happens when we die, I believe if you put the kid to death, and I shouldn't even be saying the kid. We're talking about an adult here who did something absolutely horrifying. When you put this 18-year-old to death, lights go out and that's it. Doesn't have to live for decades with what he did sitting in a prison cell. So if you ask me, what's the harsher punishment? It's, oh, you're 18? The rest of your life, whether it be 60, 70, 80 more years, you're going to do nothing. You're going to sit in a prison cell and that's it. It's over for you. That to me is the harsher penalty. So number one, if we just start with what's the harsher penalty, I would go there. And then beyond that, all of my same opposition to the death penalty stands. The government shouldn't be in the business of putting people to death. Yes, he arguably has given up his right to live freely in the world. Okay, well, take it away by putting him in a prison cell for life. Don't take it away by saying, well, we'll also do some killing. And then there's all the other arguments that are made. So no, Mazin, even in this case, I am not for the death penalty. Couple bonus ones from YouTube. Droned on YouTube said, David calls himself an independent reporter. No, I don't. I'm not a reporter. I'm a commentator. So funny. He doesn't even know if he identifies as a guy or a girl. Give me a break. No, I identify as a guy. Very confused viewer. Also, one other from Droned, who says, this Pac-Man is a joke. I cannot wait till this economy is in World War III and see what third gender he wants to talk about. I don't talk about third. We barely talk about gender on this show. And I also, while I don't make economic predictions typically, my expectation is inflation has peaked and will start to decline, and that we are getting closer to the stock market bottom. Now, obviously, that's kind of meaningless. We're always one day closer to the bottom, even if we're not there yet. But I don't even know what this person's talking about. And lastly, Claude wrote in, this Pac-Man guy is just a mouthpiece for the Biden gang. What a joke. Imagine how much education was wasted to create this propagandist liar. The one thing I don't think you can say about this show is that we're mouthpieces for the Biden gang. In fact, I find Biden pretty uninspiring, and he's done, you know, three or four good things and is otherwise exactly what I expected his administration to be. So maybe you're thinking of another show, Claude, with respect. Send in your emails to info@davidpacman.com. We have a great bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So what we have to understand is just what we've seen at the Supreme Court level, this attack that's finally reached its pinnacle up to the Supreme Court to dismantle Roe v. Wade, this work has had tentacles, and it's been working to criminalize women and also to impose civil punishments associated with pregnancy.
Today, a Democracy Now! Special. As the Supreme Court appears set to overturn Roe v. Wade, we speak with law professor Michelle Goodwin, author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women, and the Criminalization of Motherhood. We'll also talk about inclusive language around pregnancy with Chase Strangio, the ACLU's Deputy Director for Trans Justice, and look at escalating attacks on the LGBTQ plus community.
This is all happening in the same context that we're seeing the criminalization of abortion care, that we're continuing to see the massive suppression of votes across the country, and all of these things are interconnected and creating chaos and fear.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, a Democracy Now! Special. The Supreme Court appears poised to overturn abortion rights. Earlier this month, Politico published a leaked Supreme Court draft opinion, which showed the court is set to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision that's guaranteed federal constitutional protections of abortion rights for a half a century. If Roe is overturned, 13 states have so-called trigger laws that would make abortion illegal as soon as the court rules. Another 13 are expected to enact abortion bans soon after the court issues its ruling, in the case known as Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health. It was on the eve of the court's oral arguments in the Dobbs case in November that law professor Michelle Goodwin wrote a guest essay in the New York Times. It was headlined, "I Was Raped by My Father, An Abortion Saved My Life." I recently interviewed Michelle Goodwin. I began by quoting from her article, a warning to our viewers and listeners. This segment includes descriptions of sexual violence. On Wednesday, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on the constitutionality of a 15-week abortion ban in Mississippi that provides no exceptions in cases of rape or incest. What's at stake in this case matters to the countless girls and women who have been raped, including those who, like me, were raped by a father, an uncle, or another family member. It was the early morning of my 10th birthday, the first time I was raped by my father. It would not be the last. The shock was so severe, I temporarily went blind before I began the fifth grade a few weeks later. By the time the school year began, my father had taken me to see a battery of doctors. A medical explanation would paper over the fact that the trauma caused by his sexual violence had caused my body to shut down. The physiological suffering that I endured included severe migraines, hair loss, and even gray hair at 10 years old. While other girls may have longed for puberty, I loathed the idea of it. My body became a vessel that was not mine. It had been taken from me. I lived in fear of the night and the footsteps outside my bedroom door. Those are the opening words of Michelle Goodwin's New York Times guest essay last November, headlined, "I Was Raped by My Father, An Abortion Saved My Life," again written on the eve of the court's decision that could overturn the constitutional right to abortion. Michelle Goodwin joins us now. She's Chancellor's Professor at the University of California, Irvine School of Law, founding director of the Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy, and has written the book Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalization of Motherhood. Professor Goodwin, welcome back to Democracy Now! We appreciate you joining us again this week. Can you start off by talking about why you chose to write that essay?
Amy, it's important that we all understand that the new aspect of anti-abortion provisions includes